I think the first step is to write a 7-sentence guerrilla marketing plan. I give my students 5 minutes to do it. The first sentence tells the purpose of your marketing. What physical thing do you want people to do? Visit a website, call an 800 number, look for your product next time they're at the store, answer your email, clip a coupon. What do you want them to do physically? The second sentence tells the prime benefit or competitive advantage that you will stress in order to accomplish your purpose. You may have 100 benefits. Pick the main one. You may have 54 benefits. Pick your competitive advantage that your competition doesn't offer. The third sentence of your marketing plan lists your target audience or your target audiences. The fourth sentence lists the marketing weapons that you'll use. There are 100 different guerrilla marketing weapons. 62 of them are free. The fourth sentence tells the marketing weapons they'll use. The fifth sentence tells their niche in the marketplace. The buzzword is positioning. What do they stand for? What's the first word they want to enter people's minds when the people hear the name of their company? Sixth sentence tells their identity, not their image, but their identity, which is their company personality. And the seventh sentence tells their marketing budget, which should be expressed as a percentage of projected gross sales. If you start with that plan and then commit to that plan, that's how the whole thing works. That's where the magic comes from.
Hi, this is Michael Senoff with HardToFindSeminars.com. I'm pleased to present you with an incredible interview with the father of marketing, J. Conrad Levinson. J. Conrad Levinson is the author of the best-selling marketing series in history, Guerrilla Marketing, plus 24 other business books. His guerrilla concepts have influenced marketers so much that today his books appear in 37 languages and are required reading for many MBA programs worldwide. J. was a senior vice president at J. Walter Thompson, and in Europe as creative director at Leo Burnett Advertising. He writes a monthly column for Entrepreneur Magazine, articles for Incorporated Magazine. Here's what you're going to learn in this fascinating interview. You'll learn what J. Conrad Levinson's first job was in advertising. You'll learn the secret Jay learned from Hugh Hefner when he worked at Playboy. Hear how many hours a week Jay worked and why it's never changed for 32 years. Wait until you hear what Jay's father did in his 9-to-5 job. Learn the story of how Jay got a 33% response with a one-page direct mail sales letter. Hear a little secret what Jay considers the most important thing he has ever learned in marketing. Learn Jay's favorite two books of all time. Did you know that Jay plays poker? Find out on what night. Learn how a literary agent can help you sell millions of books. Hear how much Jay's made as a royalty on his very first book. Find out what edition of Jay's guerrilla marketing book is his biggest seller. Learn the key to how to get your book published, printed, and looking as good as any book in the bookstore for only $10. You'll have the website and the company name in this recording. You'll get the 800 number to the best postcard pack people in the United States. Learn the reason why 90% of all marketing campaigns fail, according to Jay. Discover the best day of the week for making money online, and it's not on Monday. You'll get the links to two websites that will show you the best internet research of how people are behaving online. Hear the truth about the Got Milk commercials. Are they successful or are they bombs? Learn how to write a 7-sentence guerrilla marketing plan in under 5 minutes. You'll hear Jay's surprising philosophy on money. And finally, learn Jay's true personality and take the same exact personality test as you listen to this interview. Have a pen and paper ready for your personality test. Put on your seatbelt and let's learn from the father of marketing, J. Conrad Levinson. I want you to do one thing. Do you have a pen and piece of paper in front of you?
I have a piece of paper and now I have a pen.
Okay. I want you to write down numbers 1 through 5. And under each number, I'm going to give you something to put by it.
Okay. I'm ready.
Okay. Number 1 would be not very, like not very interested.
Okay.
Number 2 would be just a little. Number 3 would be somewhat.
Got it.
Number 4 would be ordinarily. And number 5 would be very.
Got it.
Keep those handy, because throughout our talk, I'm going to give you a certain amount of word, and I'm going to ask you how the word relates to you based on that scale, okay?
I like it, yes.
Okay, but the first thing we're going to do is I want to ask you, starting from last night, what time did you go to bed last night?
Went to bed last night at 2:30.
2:30. What were you doing up till 2:30? Most people don't go to bed at 2:30.
We had two visitors. My daughter is visiting from Olympia, Washington, and a business associate came up from San Diego. And then we had two people join us from Berkeley, so we all went to dinner together, and then we came back to the house just to talk business, listen to music. And then when everybody left, my wife and I watched the American Idol's result show in West Wing.
What's your favorite TV show that's on currently? We're February 19, 2004. What do you really like on TV?
I like Survivor.
This reality show craze is pretty, it's really hit a chord with America, wouldn't you say?
Well, I like Real World. That probably was the first reality show, and that was my favorite show for a long time. And now the only one I watch is Survivor. But yes, it's opened a new genre. You almost knew it would, because it showed people being themselves with no script.
How long have you been married?
47 years.
Wow. How many children do you have?
One daughter. Visiting here now from Olympia, Washington. She has three children.
And so you're a granddaddy, huh?
I sure am, three times over.
Okay. So you went to sleep, and what time did you wake up this morning?
Woke up at 11, showered, cleaned up, read the San Francisco Chronicle, drank a cup of coffee, then the out-of-town visitor who's not staying with us came out over.
Do you read the San Francisco Chronicle every morning?
Every morning.
What else do you read every day?
I read a little bit of Time magazine every day. Those are the only two things that for sure I read every day. A little bit of Time magazine and the entire San Francisco Chronicle. Half time, then I read other books. As an author, people send me books and they send me a manuscript, so I do a lot of reading that I didn't plan on.
Are you a fast reader?
I would say no. I'd say maybe a little bit slower than average.
Do you watch the news every day?
Yes, I watch the news every day on various channels, either CNN or CBS.
You mentioned you're pretty booked up during the day. You're doing teleconferences or trainings?
Today, yes. And I work a three-day week. I've worked only a three-day week since 1971, so it's rare for me to be working on a Thursday. But here I am. I did a teleclass earlier today, speaking to you right now. After this, my weekend begins.
So since 1971, you've been working a three-day week?
I've been working a three-day week from my home since 1971.
Have you been working out of your home since 1971?
Always worked from my home, Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays. Of course, occasionally there are exceptions. As the person who writes books, you're invited to speak. When I give talks, sometimes they need me to speak on a Friday or Saturday. So on those days, those weeks, those are exceptions. But 99% of the time, I work Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays only.
Mm-hmm.
I stop working about 6 o'clock on a Wednesday. My weekends are four-day weekends.
Wow, that's great. So what do you do on your time off?
Ski or ride rivers or hike or explore California or explore San Francisco or take advantage of the redwood forest and the tide pools that are so close by.
Okay, that's wonderful. Now, have you been in that same home, the one that's currently on eBay for sale?
Yes, we've been in this home since 1933, and now it's up for sale. We're hoping to sell it before April 4th or on April 4th.
Wow. Was that your first home?
It was the first home we had in California. We moved here from Chicago from a home we had, and we moved right into the house I live in now. We rented it at first, then we had to buy it or leave, so we bought it now, after 33 years, it's up for sale.
How do you like eBay? Do you use eBay?
This will be my first experience ever on eBay. I'm a total neophyte. Most people I know far more about eBay than I do, and I'm the one who's supposed to know about modern technology.
Oh, Jay, eBay is absolutely incredible. I mean, as far as a research tool for markets and knowing what is out there in the market and what are people willing to pay, you have thousands and thousands of niche markets, big markets, and you can see the proof right there with people's wallets right on eBay for free.
That's such a good point, Michael.
It's really interesting. You know, a lot of the marketers, maybe the guys who ahead of the new internet generation, are not that computer savvy. How computer savvy are you? Or when the internet came into being, how did you deal with that? Did you adapt, or are you fighting it still?
I'm an early adapter of almost everything you can name. So I went online in 1993. I accepted a word processor because I'm such a fast typist. I didn't like wasting the time hitting the carriage return, so I got a computer so that I wouldn't have to hit the carriage return. And it wasn't until about 1995 that I went online. Actually, 1994 that I went online. So I've been online 10 years and had a computer for longer than that. My first computer I got in 1983. So I'm a fairly early adopter of technology, and I'm pretty much of a neophyte with technology, and yet I do all of the research for my books online myself. I'm able to find the things on the Internet. I use email like crazy. I'm very computer literate.
And then you have a high-speed connection?
I've had a high-speed connection. I was the first one in my city to get one. I've written 31 books. 31 books that I've authored or co-authored, and of those, 17 are guerrilla marketing books.
And would you say the guerrilla marketing series is what you're best known for?
Yes, I know for sure that the guerrilla marketing books, having sold 16 million copies in 39 languages, that's probably what I'm best known for.
That's incredible. Well, I want to talk more about that, and I think we're going to get that into some of the questions. And thought about, well, what am I going to talk to J. Conrad Levinson about? I thought this is something so fundamental and so elementary when we're marketing, is to give the marketplace what they want. So instead of me trying to dream up what I think my listeners and your listeners would want, I thought, let me send an email out to my entire list, let them know I'll be on the phone with J. Conrad Levinson for 90 minutes, and that a large part of the talk will be questions. And I wanted the questions to come from my website members and visitors from all over the world. So that's what I did, and I got a bunch of different questions, and a lot of them are excellent questions, and I'd like to go through some of those.
That's a wonderful idea, Michael. You are living the idea of interactivity, which is the way that marketing is changing and communications is changing. So I'm delighted that you've picked that kind of a format and that your readers have responded.
Yeah, they have. And you know, a lot of readers were appreciative. Why guess when you can do the research on the Internet and see what your market wants, and it's almost so simple that it's overlooked so often, and you just give it to them?
Well, you're so right. That's the key of succeeding with any kind of thing in business, is find out first what the people want and then make it for them, because you already know that there are people there. Some people come up with products that nobody wants.
Well, here's the first question. It's from Peter Alwyn from Sydney, Australia. And he wants to know, who has been your most influential mentors over the years, and what were the most important lessons you learned from them and applied?
Wow, thank you, Peter. Those are good questions, but I have an answer because I've thought about it. There were two mentors I had, pretty much diametric opposites from each other. Both were the presidents of advertising agencies. I didn't have a mentor. My father and I had a great relationship. I don't consider him my mentor. I did not have an older brother or anybody who was a childhood hero who wasn't playing the shortstop for the White Sox. So my first idol and mentor was a man named Howard Gossage, who ran an advertising agency in San Francisco called Weiner & Gossage. What I learned from him was how much fun it could be to work in marketing and advertising. I never realized that it was could be that much fun, and he showed me how much fun there was. I don't think he had the best advertising agency in the city or the state or anywhere, but the people who worked there had a ball, and I realized how much fun that could be.
You worked for him?
Yes.
Was that one of your first experiences with the agency?
That was my first job. I was his secretary.
You were his secretary?
Right. Because I typed fast and was willing to go to shorthand school and wash windows and get his hot chocolate every day, I got the job.
Do you type in shorthand?
No, I just type regular.
How many words a minute do you type?
Maybe 120.
And how long were you his secretary, and then did you move up with the agency?
I was his secretary for 6 months, and then he offered me two things. He said, number one, I'll give you a business card, an office with a window, and a promotion to executive secretary. He says, and I'll double your salary from $5,200. I was making $100 a week, $5,200 a year. I'll double it to $10,000. I will do that, or I'll get you a job as a copywriter at an advertising agency. He said, because we're too small to need more than one writer, and I'm it. You should be a writer. said, so take your choice. Double your salary and be my executive secretary, or have me get you a job as a copywriter.
So what'd you do?
I chose the job to get a job as a copywriter.
Who was that with?
That was with a company called Richard Meltzer in San Francisco. And from there, I went to Playboy. In the very early days of Playboy, when Hefner was still walking around in his robe and drinking Pepsi Colas, and I realized, he was not a mentor, but I realized from Hugh Hefner that you don't have to have any talent as long as you're aware of your limitations. He does not have any talent in writing, but he surrounded himself with the best writers and editors. He had no talent in photography, so he brought in the best, purchased their photos from the outside. He didn't have a clue about art, but he had taste, and he knew people who were great art directors and artists. So by surrounding himself with talent, he built the Playboy empire. And I thought, my God, the man has no talent himself for anything, except he knows his limitations and he does have a vision. It was creatively frustrating for me, a creative person, to work at Playboy, because they had an established identity and an established voice, and I would have been loony to advise him to change that identity. Went to work for Leo Burnett Advertising, and Leo Burnett at the time was the best advertising agency on the planet. I worked there and I found that Leo Burnett became my real mentor. Things he taught me about advertising and about writing and about people and the need to write in what he called shirt sleeve English, which is language that anybody can understand. And he fervently believed that you should never work past 5 o'clock or bring work home or work on weekends. And he felt that if you couldn't get your work done in the normal 9 to 5 hours, you ought not have the job working at his advertising agency.
What year did you start with Leo Burnett?
I started working there in the early 60s. I left, then I went to run the creative division of their London office in the late 60s. And then when I came back, I was pirated away by J. Walter Thompson, the largest advertising agency in the world. And after a few years there, I wanted to move to a warmer climate. Chicago was just way too cold for my ears. So they wouldn't transfer me, so I sought employment in San Francisco, got it on my own. But I found that when I started working from my home, I could accomplish in 3 days what used to take 5 days. Reason is because I was protected from meetings and from committees and from memos and from nice people coming in to shoot the breeze.
Right. And was that a frustration in all the agencies you worked?
Well, the meetings were a frustration. And yes, the memos were too. The nice people coming in to talk. No, that wasn't a frustration, but it got in the way of me completing the assignment that I was working on.
And your assignments were specifically copywriting?
Yes, copywriting and conceptualizing what the whole advertisement would be. So if it was a television commercial, I would have to determine the visuals, because television is a visual medium. Then I'd have to do the writing that went along with that.
Was this all done with a group of people, like around a boardroom table?
No, I've never been able to work with other people. This was done by me in my office all alone, and I didn't invite anybody in.
So you pretty much took the whole project on yourself?
Yes, and then I would have 12 projects, and I would take on maybe 5 and delegate the other 7 to people who worked for me.
So when you were with Leo Burnett, is that where you got your fundamental training on copywriting?
Absolutely, yes, Michael. Leo Burnett is the other person who I would list as a mentor in my life, and there haven't been any others. After Howard Gossett and after Leo Burnett, there was nobody else. Not that I learned all there was to learn, because I found that I just could read a lot. I didn't need any other mentors. I had to do a lot of thinking on my own, figuring out things on my own, because when I worked for them, I learned how to function in an advertising agency in a corporate environment. But working on my own from my home, I had to make that up as I went along. There was no precedent. My father always had a 9-to-5 job, and that's all I had had. So I didn't have any mentors in the life I'm leading now and have led since 1971. I never read anywhere that you could work 3 days a week and work from your own home and sleep late.
What did your father do?
He was a sales manager for a Stone Container Corporation, a firm in the Midwest that sells corrugated boxes.
Did you grow up in Chicago?
Yes, I sure did.
How old are you now?
I was 71 3 days ago.
In what part of Chicago did you grow up in?
I went to Hyde Park High School. I lived in South Shore, and then I moved up to the mid-north part. I lived right off the lake, right off Lawrence Avenue on a street called Castlewood Terrace.
My father's from Chicago. He's 73. He went to Finn High School.
Boy, they were an enemy of ours. They were a class act on the north side. We try to be as good as them on the South Side. But unfortunately, your father's probably a Cubs fan, and I'm a diehard White Sox fan.
Okay, remember those numbers 1 through 5? Not very, just a little, somewhat, ordinary, and very. I'm going to give you a word. Just give me the number that would correspond with it. And the first word is calm. How would you describe yourself using that key with the word calm?
I would say 4.
The next one is follower.
I would say 3.
And the next is people person.
3.
And the next is decisive.
5.
The next is free, meaning carefree.
5.
Next is double checker. Double checker.
2.
Quick.
5.
Mild.
1.
Earnest.
5.
Rebel.
3.
Thank you. I got one more question from Peter Allen because it was so good. If you had to begin all over again with no money, fame, reputation, or contacts, what would you do and how would you go about building a fortune as a marketer in today's day and age?
In the very beginning, I said no at times that I should have said yes.
Give me an example of one.
I had 4 clients, and then a 5th one wanted me to do the marketing for them, and I thought because I'm so busy with 4, I won't take on the 5th. So I said no. Later on, when I lost one of those 4 clients, I thought, darn it, I should have said yes to those people. I could have always found the time in my 3-day week to taking care of them, and I wouldn't have, I wouldn't be so close to the edge.
When you went to work for the agency and he, well, I guess he somehow influenced you with a 3-day week or a 5-day week or not taking work at home, were there days where you did work a lot longer than that in the earlier days?
No, never. I was always able to finish by 5. I never, ever would have dreamt of taking, of bringing work home. I wanted to be with my wife and child, and I never would have thought of working weekends. He didn't talk about the 3-day week or even put that idea in my mind. All he put in my mind was the idea of professionals are able to get their work done in normal business hours, and there's no need to be a workaholic.
Right. When you're on your time off, do you generate a lot of ideas on your when you're not working and you're doing things like hiking and recreational stuff?
No, I try not to, and they don't automatically come. I'm really not thinking of ideas. Instead, I'm trying to live in the moment and in the here and in the now and in the environment where I am. It's hard to have ideas when you're making turns on an advanced ski slope or when you're climbing up a waterfall.
I would think so. Okay, that's some good advice. What things in your business do you think cannot be delegated to others? And this is by David Jennings of Melbourne, Australia.
David, who lives in the city with the most beautiful buses on planet Earth, that is a question I've asked myself and come up with an answer that I've lived with, and I'm happy I asked the question, and I'm happy I came up with these answers. I believe that you should never do anything that you can't delegate. I think you should delegate as much as possible. However, in my case and in my business, 2 things I never delegate are, number 1, the writing, and number 2, the planning. I want to do the planning myself. I want to do all the writing. I just can't delegate it because I have a certain voice I trust in and believe in. And insofar as the vision, I'll do anything to help achieve that vision. And it's hard to delegate your vision.
Right.
It comes from so deep within. But I delegate everything else.
Give me some examples in your business today, the things you delegate. What are some examples?
A webmaster who maintains our website, keeps it fresh. He has an assistant who does the real ho-hum parts of writing code and keeping a website up to snuff. We have a person we delegate everything to do with joint ventures. People approach us more and more to do joint ventures with us, and I'm getting more and more clueless as to how they work. So we brought a man on board who's an expert on joint ventures.
How is he paid?
He gets a percentage of whatever he brings in by the joint ventures. So it's no lose for us, and it causes him to work harder and smarter because he cashes in on the eventual payout. I believe strongly in profit sharing with anybody. We've never had employees until 2 months ago when we hired my daughter. I've never believed in having an employer being an employee. We delegate photography. We delegate art. We delegate design. I have a weekly phone call at our Guerrilla Marketing Association. I delegate that phone call to somebody else. We put up daily marketing tips on our website, every day a new tip, and I gave a research man all the books I've written, and I said, why don't you pick the tips from out of these books? So I've delegated that editing portion, that editing part to him.
Okay, now are you the person dealing with all these people, or do you have someone else doing that?
This is the end of part one. Please continue to part two.